Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law podcast for July 2010. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. On June the 28th, after over 7.5 months of deliberation, the Supreme Court of the United States finally handed down their decision in the Bilski case. The somewhat narrow issue before the court was whether the machine or transformation test was the only test to be used to determine whether a process was statutory subject matter. The decision has wide-ranging implications for not only business method patents, but also for software-related inventions and medical diagnostic procedures and devices. The subject matter of the Bilski patent application involved a business method, a process to manage the consumption risk costs of a commodity sold by a commodity provider at a fixed price. The patent application had a broad claim that was not limited to any particular commodities market, and a more narrow claim that related to the energy consumption market. The Supreme Court judges were unanimous in holding that the Bilski process was not patentable because it was merely an abstract idea. My guest for this podcast is Dale Lazar, a partner with the DLA Piper firm in Reston, Virginia. In addition to being named by Chambers as one of America's leading lawyers for his patent prosecution and litigation practice, Dale also teaches patent law at George Mason University Law School and has written and lectured extensively in the area of patent drafting and prosecution for the Patent Resources Group. I spoke with Dale from his office in Reston, Virginia. Good afternoon, Dale.
Hi, Don.
So, given what the Supreme Court of the United States recently said in the Bilski case, are business methods patentable in the United States?
Well, I think that's perhaps one of the most intriguing questions that comes out of the Bilski decision. And interestingly, that the answer to that question all hangs on Justice Scalia. You have Justice Kennedy writing for the majority that suggests that business methods are patentable out to the limit of abstract ideas. You can't patent an abstract business method, but if it's not abstract, you probably can. Then you have four justices agreeing with Justice Stevens, three other justices, saying that no matter what, business methods are not patentable. So you have four justices saying business methods are patentable out to the limit of abstract ideas, four saying not patentable at all. Then you have Judge Scalia, the ninth, sitting right in the middle. He agrees, well, first of all, he was not willing to join the Stevens decision that business methods are not patentable per se. On the other hand, he didn't join the portion of the Kennedy opinion that suggests that business methods are patentable out to the limit of abstract ideas. So I think we still need to find a more appropriate case for Judge Scalia to weigh in on to really know what he thinks about business methods. Apparently, he thinks they're patentable up to some extent, but that extent is somewhere short of abstract ideas. So it's an open question. And now with the change in personnel on the Supreme Court, it really opens up the question.
The Supreme Court blessed the machine and transformation tests as tests for a patentable process. What exactly are those tests and what kind of processes fit within them?
Okay, so for a process to be patentable under the machine or transformation test, either the process has to transform an article from one form to another, or the process has to be implemented on a machine. Now, when you say the Supreme Court blessed this test, we have to be a little careful. The Federal Circuit in the Bilski case had decided that the machine or transformation test is the sole test for what is patentable subject matter in the United States. The Supreme Court backed away from that and said, no, it's not the sole test, but an important indicator of what may or may not be patentable. So, yes, it's a good indication. If a process involves a machine or transforms an article from one form to another, then that probably is patentable subject matter. But the Supreme Court really falls back on the notion that abstract ideas are not patentable. It's kind of a negative test. Presumably, everything that is not an abstract idea or physical phenomena or law of nature is patentable. I think what the Supreme Court is getting at there is there has to be some physical reality to an invention. There must be some connection of a method to the physical world, either through a transformation, for example, or by implementation on a machine, or perhaps something else beyond machines or transformations to remove a process from the realm of an abstract idea.
Just staying with the abstract idea point for a moment, and the laws of nature and physical phenomenon as excluded subject matter makes sense to me, because physical phenomenon are what happen, and laws of nature are what man or woman have imposed upon and built a construct to say, well, here's the math that seems to describe what happens in the universe. But neither of those things are new, or the law of nature, if you will, is just an idea that describes something that's old. We just may have learned about it or understood it. The abstract idea test, I think some other people have difficulty with, especially in the context of Bilski, because to what extent was what Bilski was doing an abstract idea on the one hand, or on the other hand, the application of that idea to some type of practical purpose, that being some method of business?
Yeah. Yeah, so the Bilski invention involved a process for distributing risk in a financial transaction. I think perhaps one way to look at it is to go back to our Constitution, where our Constitution says that basically the purpose of the patent system is to promote progress in the useful arts. So you can ask yourself, how do abstract ideas fit into progress in the useful arts? You're right. With regard to laws of nature and physical phenomena, you can think about invention versus discovery, that we're willing to give patents for inventions, but we're not willing to give patents for discoveries, things that already exist but no one has known about, which falls more with the laws of nature or physical phenomena. Abstract ideas aren't necessarily discoveries. They may very well be more like inventions, but I think perhaps the question is whether an abstract idea can promote progress in the useful arts without some sort of physical reality to that idea. So perhaps an applied idea can promote progress in the useful arts, but perhaps an abstract idea can't.
Well, your physical reality and physical world point might be a valid one that has yet to be encouraged or adopted by the court, but that seems to be a good way to go, because if you're talking about distributing risk, risk, if you will, is a construct or an idea, and is applying an idea that is abstract to begin with, or changing or massaging an idea, which is, I guess, what the Bilski invention was doing, you still end up with an idea, some type of construct, and not a better signal from a heart arrhythmia patient, or a better signal from something real in the physical world. The arrhythmia case, as I recall, was one where one of the reasons it got patented was because it was real-life data that was being massaged, manipulated, or changed. So there was a transformation of, to come back to your point, a physical reality or something in the physical world. But here we have something in the business method regimen that isn't. It's in a imaginary world, if you will, where pieces of paper have value, and just because the president's picture's placed on it, or it's got a seal of a company on it. But they're all about some type of artificial thing that isn't real as you describe it in the physical sense. So
I agree. Exactly right. That might be the explanation. No, I think you're right. You know, that is interesting. Why aren't abstract ideas patentable?
Well, I think
without going back to the constitutional roots, you know, I'm not sure that it makes much sense.
And coming back to Bilski, the door seems to have been left open by the Supreme Court of the United States to having a process be patentable, even if it doesn't meet the machine or transformation test. And I guess we're seeing echoes of KSR here, where the obviousness test was rejected as you can't make an exclusive rule as to what is obvious or what isn't. You have to treat each case on its merits and use these points as guidelines. But
right.
That seems to be what the Supreme Court is doing again in this case. They're leaving the door open, but where do you think we'll see these other tests coming from, or what other kinds of tests do you think we'll see for patentable processes?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that, at least with regard to business methods, the Supreme Court, or at least Justice Kennedy, says that if you can define a class of business methods that are clearly abstract ideas always, then we would be happy to bless your rule that blocks patentability of anything that falls within that class. It'll be interesting to see whether the Federal Circuit takes up the Supreme Court on that offer. I'm not sure, though, we're going to see another broad test to replace machine or transformation. It may be that the Federal Circuit is merely going to develop case law to help us understand what is an abstract idea and what is not an abstract idea, what is an implied idea. I'm not sure we need a test beyond abstract idea. We can speculate all concerning all of these secondary sorts of
indicators.
As to what may or may not be patentable. But if the fundamental idea is that we can patent abstract ideas, why don't we simply go with that as the test and just develop the case law as to what is abstract and what is sufficiently applied?
There was a test pre-Bilski on patentable subject matter in the business method area, and that was that there be a useful, concrete, and tangible result. The Supreme Court didn't seem to like that test. Is that fair?
I think that would be an understatement. The Supreme Court ridiculed, I guess, the useful, concrete, and tangible result test. I love what Justice Breyer wrote about that test. He said that application of that test, He said, indeed, the introduction of that approach to patentability associated with the State Street decision preceded the granting of patents that ranged from somewhat ridiculous to the truly absurd. So clearly the Supreme Court thought that the useful, concrete, tangible result test was not useful in drawing the line between what's patentable and what's not patentable.
Where does this decision leave the patented processes that were determined to be patentable under the State Street test of useful, concrete, and tangible?
Yeah, I think there are a whole class of patents out there that are invalid, that have been invalidated by the decisions in the Bilski case, both at the Federal Circuit and now even at the Supreme Court. You can say that the Supreme Court slightly broadened the standard of patentable subject matter relative to what the Federal Circuit had done. But even under the Supreme Court's analysis, I think a lot of patents were granted based on the useful, concrete, and tangible result test, which may not have meet the requirements of an abstract idea test as the Supreme Court sees it. And so I think a number of these more intangible patents are invalid, and it's something that all practitioners need to look at, whether it's in the context of litigation or licensing.
So the worst that could happen is it'll create lots of litigation for people like you and me to go out and determine the scope of the validity of these patents.
Yeah. At the very least, I'm not sure we need to determine the scope of these patents necessarily, but I think there is going to be a lot of litigation to at least flesh out the limits of what inventions are patentable and what inventions are mere abstract ideas. I think as we develop case law to identify where the line is with regard to abstract ideas, then the validity of these patents will become more clear. The problem with Bilski is that the invention of Bilski was so far from the line between what's patentable and not patentable that the case really doesn't help us understand where the line really is.
And what advice would you have for people who are drafting patents on processes, be they business method related, software related, or otherwise?
Right. Well, I think you need to work as hard as you can with the inventor to tie the process you're trying to patent to the physical world. You need some strong interconnection with the physical reality. In that regard, if the method has any sort of structure associated with it, you want to stress that structure. In the context of software, for example, you want to stress the system that the software is operating. Often, you know, with internet kind of inventions, you have figure one with a big cloud in the middle that we label the internet, and then you have a server coming off that cloud, and you have clients coming off that cloud. You really want to stress the physical nature of the system on which that software is designed to operate.
So, Dale, what are your predictions on what we're going to see on a going-forward basis, particularly in the Federal Circuit?
Well, I think the big question is, will the Federal Circuit try yet again to come up with some test as a surrogate for the ultimate issue of whether or not a process is abstract? We've had a whole series of these tests over the past 30 years. Going back, you know, point of novelty at one point and got involved in this test. More recently, we have this useful, concrete, tangible result test from State Street. With Bilski, the Federal Circuit tried a machine or transformation test. All of these have proven inadequate to define what is patentable in the United States. Now we have the Supreme Court saying, well, if it's an abstract idea, you can patent it. It may very well be that the Federal Circuit will latch on to that and simply devote itself to defining what's abstract and what's not abstract. I think that would be my prediction for moving forward. And if you think about it, after all of the cases that we've seen now from the Federal Circuit, if they had devoted themselves to simply trying to define what's abstract and what's not abstract, right now we would have a pretty good idea about where that line between patentable and unpatentable is, whereas right now we don't, because the Federal Circuit hadn't developed the case law in that direction. So I predict that the Federal Circuit will devote itself over the next series of cases relating to statutory, you know, patentable subject matter to help define what we mean by an abstract idea and what is an applied idea.
It will be interesting to see it develop.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much, Dale. Much appreciated.
It's my pleasure, Don.
My guest has been Dale Lazar, a patent prosecutor and litigator with DLA Piper in Reston, Virginia. For further information regarding the Bilski decision and information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You've been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.